I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire has come close before to allowing the use of marijuana for medical purposes. In fact, earlier this year, it came very close. The state legislature, overwhelmingly with bipartisan support, approved a bill permitting seriously and terminally ill patients to grow marijuana for personal use with a doctor's prescription. But Governor Lynch vetoed the measure, and in June, the state Senate fell 3 votes short of the number needed to override. Now, just 5 months later, and the politics of this issue have shifted in favor. That's because Governor-elect Maggie Hassan says she supports medical marijuana. Also, 2 more New England states have jumped on board, Connecticut and most recently Massachusetts, making New Hampshire the only state in our region that doesn't allow marijuana use for medical purposes. But opponents of these laws say there are many good reasons for New Hampshire to remain the outlier. Their concerns range from patient safety to wider use of the drug, even among healthy people, to trouble with the federal government, which still considers marijuana an illegal substance. Today in The Exchange, the future of medical marijuana here in the Granite State. And let's hear from you. Should New Hampshire join the rest of New England and allow very ill patients to use marijuana if it eases their suffering? Or is this an open door toward broader public availability, use, and possible abuse of this drug? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us at exchange@nhpr.org. You can post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. With me in studio, Matt Simon, legislative analyst for the Marijuana Policy Project, a national group focused on reforming marijuana laws. And Matt, nice to see you. Welcome back.
Thanks, Laura. Great to be here.
Also joining us from Florida is Kevin Sabet. He directs the Institute on Drug Policy at the University of Florida College of Medicine. And Kevin, I also want to mention your work with the Obama administration, a former senior advisor for drug policy. And you worked with Massachusetts Medical Society on their opposition to Massachusetts' recent law. Matt, I want to start with you, though, turning to New Hampshire. You and I have talked about this many times before, where New Hampshire comes very close to approving medical marijuana, not close enough. What do you think the chances are this time?
Well, they're certainly much better than they have been in the past. We've pushed this boulder up this mountain twice, landed on the governor's desk in 2009 and in 2012, only to not quite have the votes to override his veto both times. So certainly given the election results, given a number of other factors, including Massachusetts and Connecticut both passing it this year and having a supportive governor taking office, certainly there is support for this in both chambers, on both sides of the aisle, and we're more optimistic than ever that that 2013 will be the year this passes in New Hampshire.
Interesting. One of the few issues where there is bipartisan support these days. How does it change the equation? I understand what you're saying about Governor-elect Hassan, but how does having the rest of New England, all our surrounding states now, Matt, how does that change the equation for us in the Granite State?
I'm not sure it changes it too much. I mean, the issues for the patients are the same. You know, they're suffering. They've been failed by conventional treatments. They're looking for alternatives that would help them. And right now, many of them are afraid to talk to their doctors about this. If their doctors do recommend marijuana, there's no way they can legally get it or be protected from arrest. They could, as a couple of our patients have done, move to Vermont, and that's something that I've seen people do. I don't think people should have to move out of the live free or die state in order to, you know, seek medical care. And that's, you know, if anything, the hypocrisy has been amplified by the fact that we're surrounded by states that allow this, and we insist on being the outlier.
And one more question, and then I want to bring Kevin into this. Who are you helping? You said one of our patients or some of our patients have moved to Vermont. Who are you working with on this?
Well, I began organizing patients on this back in 2008, and, you know, some of them are cancer patients, multiple sclerosis, severe pain patients who have cabinets full of OxyContin and morphine and, you know, pain medicines like that. And they all see marijuana as a potentially safer alternative than the pharmaceuticals that they've been taking. In many cases, they see it as something that's going to be more effective, And for the pain patients, it can reduce the amount of opiates that they need to take in order to live and maintain their quality of life.
And Kevin Sabet, again, you've been working on drug policy issues for a long time at the national level and worked with Massachusetts on its effort against the Massachusetts Medical Society on its effort against medical marijuana. Outline your concerns for us then about medical marijuana, Kevin, please, and then we'll go into detail.
Sure. I mean, I think everyone has compassion for the seriously ill and the truly terminally ill. That's one thing. But what we know from states that have done this, and there have been over a dozen, is that the vast majority, over 95% of people who use medical marijuana in these states do not have cancer, MS, AIDS, or a severe debilitating illness, let alone a terminal illness. So the issue is everyone has compassion for folks, but we don't necessarily smoke marijuana to get the effects that it might have. And there might be medical value to marijuana, just like there's medical value to opium. What I meant to say is we don't smoke opium to get the value of that. We take morphine, we take other painkillers that have proven to be effective. Why do we need to smoke marijuana to get what might have medical value in its individual components? So the reason the Mass Medical Society and also the American Medical Association and every single major medical organization in the country opposes this state patchwork of smoked marijuana as medicine is that, first of all, people don't vote on medicine. We have a scientific process to do that. But secondly, we can extract the benefits from marijuana, and we should. There are benefits. We should extract those in a scientific manner, not have people smoking or vaporizing. So if this bill was about, a non-smoke delivery system of marijuana for those that were really terminally ill that didn't have time to wait for the research, we might be having a different conversation. But I think it's very telling that a lobbying organization that lobbies for full legalization is the one spearheading this. And if we want to have a legalization debate, we should, but that's a separate issue. It's a legitimate debate to have. We shouldn't confuse the two.
Another question for you, Kevin. You said the vast majority of medical marijuana users are not that ill. 95% don't have those conditions that we would all sympathize with. How do we know that? Have there been studies in medical marijuana states?
Yeah, multiple peer-reviewed studies. In fact, one of them from 2007 looked at over 4,000 California users, and they found that the average user was a 32-year-old white male with a history of drug and alcohol abuse and no history of chronic illness. It was a general grab bag of pain that the average 32-year-old white male had reported. I mean, look, I think most people know that it's turned into a joke in these states. The issue is, if we're talking about the truly terminally ill and the people that are used on the commercials or the token person with the terminal illness used in front of legislators to use compassion to do this, let's find a safe way to get them whatever they need. Frankly, look, if I had a loved one that had terminal stage 4 cancer and needed heroin, they should be able to get heroin, even if it's not approved. But that's on a compassionate basis, on a single individual case-by-case basis, not on a, opening this up, which is what would happen in New Hampshire. And unfortunately, I've told people who wanted to have medical marijuana, let's sit down and compromise and figure out something where, while we're waiting for the research, the 5% of folks who really need anything to make them feel better and conventional medicines have failed them, let's figure out a safe way to do this so that we don't have dispensaries, we don't have what we have in Massachusetts right now, which are lawyers from Colorado and California literally moving to Massachusetts tonight. They're having a seminar in Cambridge. There's multiple going on. People trying to make money off of this. I think we need to really evaluate it.
Well, and Matt, let's talk about the point that Kevin makes, and it's been raised by a lot of people on the medical side, that the FDA has not approved marijuana, has not looked at its safety, and yet, as Kevin said, there are two FDA-approved drugs derived from marijuana, Nebulone and Marinol. So why not, Matt, stick with these, which have already gone through the vetting process? Why isn't that good enough?
Well, those drugs haven't been effective for most patients, and they're not widely prescribed by doctors. We can go into the reasons for that, but the main reason is that they're simply THC. Marinol's synthesized THC without any other cannabinoids. And as Kevin knows, the other cannabinoids play a role in this as well. Scientists are only beginning to understand how other cannabinoids work with THC and what their potential therapeutic benefits are. Of course, we're going to agree that research should move forward. But I'd like to comment on a couple of points that Kevin raised. First of all, the smoking of marijuana. We don't advocate that patients smoke marijuana. patients have the option under these laws of how to use the marijuana, and under a legal scenario.
The vast majority of folks smoke it in these states.
That may be true, but when they're able to talk to a doctor, they're able to visit a dispensary that's run professionally, they're able to learn about vaporizers, they're able to learn about other methods of ingesting cannabis that are not as harmful or even harmful at all, perhaps, depending on the research. So that's key. Patients are smoking now. If somebody gets cancer, goes into chemotherapy, we hear these stories all the time. The drugs didn't work for me. I was so nauseous. My friend brought me some marijuana, and I smoked it. That's what they're doing now under prohibition, and that's what we want to move away from, is to help people understand there's more to this plant than something you roll up and smoke. Second of all, when you talk about California as an example of a medical marijuana state, California is the worst possible example. It's not even under a general pain category that these patients are qualifying. California's initiative allows marijuana to be recommended by a physician for any condition.
If so California's not a good example.
It's a terrible example. Yeah. Look at Vermont, where we only have 600-some patients. It's a very restrictive program, and those patients are seriously ill.
I want to hear Matt finish up, Kevin, and then I'll
go to you. So let's focus on the programs that we're actually trying to emulate, and it's a very different process here. We're going through the legislature. We're making policy with bipartisan teams of legislatures trying to figure this out. In Massachusetts, you have an initiative that's written and can't be amended. Two totally different scenarios.
Well, one more question for you, Matt. Kevin said that it was interesting that groups like yours, which are in favor of reforming our overall marijuana laws, he said pro-legalizing groups are heading this effort. How do you address the suspicion that this medical marijuana effort is sort of a convenient camel's nose under the tent for you?
Well, look at the sponsors of the legislation over the last several years. Look at the people who come and testify. They're not talking about legalization. They're talking about how policy can benefit them and not run them out of this state. Now, I, in 1994, wrote a paper in college on marijuana legalization, and since then I've been attracted to those arguments intellectually. Well, guess what? It's not on the table in New Hampshire as an option. Two states out west last week have past legalization initiatives. We'll see how they go, but legislators are going to want to take a wait-and-see approach on that before it's discussed here.
All right, lots of calls and emails coming in, gentlemen. We'll go to them after a very short break. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. We'll be right back.
This is NHPR. It's 9:19. Good morning. And more on the medical marijuana debate in the Granite State on the Exchange. And at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, the role of the Securities and Exchange Commission. Governor John Lynch ends his historic fourth term in office in January. New Hampshire's longest-serving governor will look back on his years in office with NHPR's Laura Kanoy in a special conversation. Don't miss the Exchange next Tuesday morning at 9 in the morning and again at 8 in the evening on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Raff Young and Pignatelli, celebrating 25 years of innovative client-focused solutions for businesses and nonprofits throughout New England, rafflaw.com. From Pact World Mutual Funds, a leader in sustainable investing, integrating environmental, social, and governance factors into investment analysis and decision-making, pactsworld.com for tomorrow. And Markham Amarge of Keene, New Hampshire, worldwide coating supplier, making their mark through people and innovation locally and globally for over 100 years. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the medical marijuana debate as it returns to the Granite State. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Tell us what you think. Should New Hampshire join the rest of New England in approving the use of marijuana for very ill patients? Or do you have concerns that this might be an open door toward broader public use of this drug, possible abuse, as one of our guests has said? Our number for you to join us again is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Matt Simon, Kevin Sabet, before we go to the phones, Kevin, you had something you were wanting to say just before the break. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, so what I want to say is two things. First of all, I think we need to be careful. We keep framing it as very ill. That's the issue here, is that the way it's written in New Hampshire, the way it's been written in Massachusetts as well, is there's a listing of every single ailment that is going to pull at people's heartstrings. And then the final element says, Yeah, and by the way, anything else which a doctor thinks is appropriate. And so, you know, we sort of couch it as compassion, as cancer, as AIDS, and that's, again, less than 5% of it. If that was the vast majority, we could be having a different conversation about a safe way to get these folks really anything that they need, let alone marijuana, anything else that makes them feel better when conventional wisdom fails them, firstly. Secondly, I do think it's disingenuous to sort of downplay the role that Matt's organization has played in. I mean, they are the key group in this country now in terms of legalizing marijuana outright. They started with medical in Colorado and Washington, and then, you know, they said, no, we're not talking about legalization. 10 years later, $10 million in combined in those states for legalization. So I hope that won't be the case in New Hampshire. We need to look at the record. And we need to have a separate debate on that, which is fully legitimate, but let's not confuse the two things.
Let's go to our callers now. And from Jamaica, Vermont, again, Vermont being a state where medical marijuana is legal, Francis joins us. Hi, Francis. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thank you for having me. I'm calling to refute Kevin Sabet's argument about smoking marijuana specifically. I'm a patient here in Vermont. I've been in the program for 2 years. I know a number of other patients that benefit from this. And the different methods of intaking the substance for relief work differently on different patients. I know an MS patient who's has severe MS who can only smoke the plant. Vaporization doesn't work for him. The actual physical plant itself, the material of that plant seems to make a difference for him. And although we understand that smoking medicine is not something that is normal for us, things must progress. The pharmaceutical companies, I see them simply as wanting to own parts of the plant, Sativex, Marinol. Marinol simply doesn't work. It is only THC, as the other gentleman had stated. The CBDs and CBNs are very important. And so the argument that this gentleman has simply doesn't hold water from the patient's perspective, from someone that with experience with this. Additionally, if New Hampshire does legalize, I would highly recommend that they're not as controlling as Vermont right now. We're having problems with our dispensary programs. We do not have dispensaries up and running. We will not have them, I expect, for another 6 to 12 months, and then only possibly one or two.
So it's been pretty strict in Vermont. Francis, a real quick question for you. We talked earlier with the guests, but I want your perspective. You know, there are these pills that are derived from the marijuana plant. So why not just bypass all the concern and controversy and take the pill?
You know, that's what my back surgeon asked me. And I'll tell you simply that the Marinol does not do what the plant does because it eliminates other elements within the plant. You've got something that actually works here. You've got an actual natural herbal plant that works. You don't need to break it down and sell it to a pharmaceutical company so that they can control it and you can take it orally. A cancer patient simply cannot take an oral medicine when they cannot hold it down.
Okay. Francis, thanks a lot for calling in. Kevin, he directed that to you,
sure.
So go ahead real quickly, and then I've got an email I want to share with both of you.
Yeah, so the caller's right in that there are multiple different components of marijuana, and THC is just one of them. That's the THC pill, Marinol, we talked about. There are other components that are being scientifically developed. Currently, they're in clinical trials in the U.S., late-stage trials. But where I would disagree with the caller is he's saying we don't want pharmaceutical companies to get a hold of it. We want to just be able to grow the plant, you know, sort of grow it on our own without real scientific FDA standards. Remember, FDA approves medicines that are safe, effective, they're specific. We can do dose to dose so that the medicine you get in Maine is the same as in New Hampshire, is the same in California. And that is key. I mean, I think the FDA, for all of its faults, and of course there are faults with the FDA, there are some positive things it can do. It standardizes drugs so that people know what they're getting. You cannot do that with the marijuana plant. So unfortunately, I hear a lot of people say, well, we don't want the pharmaceutical companies to get a hold of it because they're going to try and make money off it. No doubt that pharma needs to be reformed as well and those issues. But we want the standardization of these drugs. We don't want them to be such variability.
Well, and thanks for that call, Francis. And here's an email that I want to share with both of you. This is from Dr. Seddon Savage. She's president of the American Pain Society, director of the Dartmouth Center on Addiction Recovery and Education. And this is an interesting take on the health aspect of marijuana. She says, I think many concerns from the medical perspective are addressed if we conceptualize the elective use of marijuana for symptom management as herbal treatment, not medical treatment, i.e., let's talk about herbal marijuana rather than medical marijuana. While this may seem on first consideration a superficial shift in language, I think it profoundly changes the way we understand marijuana's use in healing. Herbal treatment implies it's not FDA-approved medicine, it's not available in standardized doses, it is not well-studied. While there may be benefits, we don't know all the risks. And herbal treatment, she says, doesn't carry the same message to young people that, quote, it's medicine, so it must be safe. So Seddon Savage says if it's viewed as an herb, not unlike St. John's wort for depression, chamomile tea for agitation, i.e. not medically or FDA-approved, use at your own risk. This is a real interesting take that I have not heard on this issue of medical marijuana. She's saying call it herbal marijuana. I think to you first, Matt Simon, and then Kevin Sabet, I want to hear from you. Go ahead, Matt.
Well, if I'm to take from that she would support the legislation if we simply changed some words around, then I would take that as a very positive thing. It is an herb. It is an herbal medicine for many people, and that's, I think, accurate. The problem is it's an herb that's criminally prohibited in the state of New Hampshire and federally. That the scenario I talked about earlier where the compassionate person gives somebody a small amount of marijuana to try, that person's committing a felony by distributing that marijuana. The person possessing it is committing a Class A misdemeanor and, you know, could get up to a year in jail, up to a $2,000 fine in New Hampshire. These are significant criminal penalties. We need to protect these people from arrest. That's what this issue is really about. I'm not out promoting the use of marijuana medicinally or otherwise. I'm promoting the choice that this needs to be a doctor's choice, something they have in their toolkit to help patients.
What do you think, Kevin?
Well, again, a doctor's choice needs to be made after careful scientific consideration, not after political lobbying. So that's the issue here, is we're deciding medicine in a political environment, which I don't understand why we need to do that, versus a scientific environment. So
what
going
about
to
the herbal thing?
Yeah, the herbal. Yeah, I want to address that too. I think that is an interesting way to conceptualize it and sort of at your own risk. I wouldn't necessarily put it, though, in the same category as St. John Wort's or chamomile. I mean, we know a lot more about today's marijuana than we ever did. Today's, you know, we sort of say it's not your Woodstock weed of the 60s, and researchers
right,
from
more
Harvard,
powerful.
And, right, much more powerful, as many people know, five times more powerful. It's really, the THC content has been, you know, artificially increased. And what's interesting, actually, we're talking about these other components in this, we can say herb for now, is that the other components like CBD that the previous caller talked about, which is showing promise, which does not get you high, that's actually been bred out of modern marijuana. So even if we call it herbal, I think there needs to be some standardization so that we actually increase the what are positive aspects of it. The problem with today's marijuana with the growers is that nobody wants to grow marijuana that's high in CBD because that actually takes away the high and it's less profitable. So it's in the sort of quasi, you know, illegal world. Let's do it medically and in a scientific manner and have a rational conversation about it. And then if you want to legalize it outright, we can have a separate discussion. Finally, just at the end, people in New Hampshire are not in jail for small amounts of marijuana. I mean, it's a very small penalty, if ever. It may say up to 1 year on the books, but they've done analyses in New Hampshire and other states. No one's serving jail time for very small amounts of marijuana. It's not happening.
Well, and again, on that herbal suggestion or thought from Dr. Savage, she says none of these other herbs that she mentions have the same abuse and addiction potential,
right.
Hence the need for tight and thoughtful regulation right. of herbal marijuana yeah. to prevent widespread availability for trivial purposes and for diversion, a concern that you've mentioned, Kevin
right.
Sabet. And I know you need to leave us, Kevin, so thank you yeah. very much for being with us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me. This is an important conversation. Look forward to more.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Kevin Sabet, he directs the Institute on Drug Policy at the University of Florida College of Medicine. He worked with the Obama administration on drug policy. He also worked with the Massachusetts Medical Society in opposition to the Bay State's new law allowing medical marijuana. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Matt Simon, I know you wanted to quickly address what Kevin Sabet said about today's marijuana isn't your father's marijuana, so to speak.
Well, he was talking about how marijuana has been bred for the recreational market, and that's true. Marijuana being an illegal substance, breeders have tried to increase the THC level, and that's growing for the recreational market illegally. Now, the dispensaries that are growing their own marijuana and are producing medicines based on it that patients can go buy in a state like Colorado that has state-licensed dispensaries, they can buy products, not just marijuana, but products that have been tested for the THC level and the other cannabinoid levels. And these growers are trying to produce high CBD, high CBN, and it's labeled so the patient can see this is how much THC, this is how much CBD, and there are also derivative products available on the shelves at these dispensaries that are close to what Kevin might like, a high ratio of the other cannabinoids and a low ratio of THC.
And again, Kevin Sabet, opposing medical marijuana from a medical perspective. Joining us now is someone who's looked at this more from a law enforcement perspective. Tom Reed is on the line, Deputy County Attorney in Rockingham County. And Tom, welcome back to The Exchange. Good to have you.
Oh, thank you, Laura.
And as we've been talking about, Tom, and as you well know, New Hampshire is now the last New England state that doesn't allow medical marijuana. And people have been saying this could change given the support of Governor-elect Hassan. How do you feel about that? And how are people in law enforcement talking about that, thinking about that?
I would echo and agree with some of the things that Kevin Sabet said, as well as Dr. Savage. Concerns about calling this medicine. When it isn't medicine, it's not FDA approved. There haven't been scientific studies that have proven. In fact, all the studies and reputable studies say that it's dangerous. But when you do call something medicine, you normalize the use. And a couple of things happen, and we've seen it in the other states where it becomes more acceptable in the youth, the use of marijuana, the availability of marijuana in the youth community increases dramatically, and crime increases dramatically. It certainly increases. And there isn't any organization, scientific organization, that supports this. And I'm more concerned now with moving in a direction of having state officials involved in doing something that violates federal law. And people have said for a while, you know, well, the Obama administration has looked the other way. And that may have been the case and may have been the message that was sent out early on. But we've seen in a number of states where the U.S. attorneys have sent out legal opinions threatening to not only prosecute the dispensary owners, but growers and state officials who are involved in the licensing system for medical marijuana. And I don't want to see the folks, certainly the state employees, the public employees in New Hampshire, involved in and complicit in violating federal law. That just is fundamentally something we shouldn't be doing.
Could you address that too, Matt? That's a concern I've heard elsewhere, that the federal government still considers marijuana an illegal substance. So even if New Hampshire went ahead and approved this, what might that mean, Matt, for doctors who prescribe it, for patients who take it, even for state employees who might be involved in overseeing a system of medical marijuana?
That's an interesting question. I mean, it does remain illegal under federal law. There's some renewed interest in that on Capitol Hill, and finally with so many states, we may see some changes in the next couple of years. I hope so. But as a matter of practicality, enforcement falls entirely to the states. The DEA doesn't get involved unless there are at least 100 plants or so. I expect Tom can corroborate that. They're not out. They don't have the resources or the people to prosecute small-scale marijuana cultivation, distribution, use in New Hampshire. Patients have nothing to fear from the federal government. Doctors are free to recommend this in the privacy of the exam room. That's protected by court cases, and that's been upheld. So the real fears are, you know, if the federal government were to prosecute state employees, that would be an outrage. That hasn't happened in any state, and we see Maine, we see Vermont moving forward with licensing dispensaries. They have not received threats, really, from the federal government, and there have been no attempt to prosecute anybody in those
Although
states.
Although I've read, Matt, recently, in fact, there was an article in the Washington Post by the head of your organization, Ron Campia, executive director of the Marijuana Policy Project, saying that the Obama administration a year or two ago kind of shifted gears on this thing and has been going after dispensaries and so forth who put forward medical marijuana.
There were a lot of raids in California specifically and in Montana specifically, two states that did not have state-licensed, state-regulated dispensaries. So the Obama doctrine, or what we call the Ogden memo, Ogden being the deputy attorney general who issued this memo in 2009, said that as long as people are complying with state laws clearly and they're in clear and unambiguous compliance with state laws, they won't be a priority for the federal government. Well, in California and Montana, there is no clarity with the state law regarding dispensaries. So after that memo, states step forward, and Maine and Vermont are both examples of this. Okay, we want to regulate this. We feel like we can now, and we feel like that's the best thing for our people. And I think those programs are working very well in both Maine and Vermont. The dispensaries aren't up and running in Vermont, but two have been licensed and two more have been approved once the applicants are ready.
Well, and Tom, maybe in a moment we can talk about the best type of system, whether some systems are better than others. But I want to invite our listeners back into our conversation. And Alina is on the air from Loudoun. Hi, Alina. Go ahead. Thanks for waiting. Alina, are you with us in Loudoun? Okay, I guess Alina's not there. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Alina, I hope you call back. So let's tackle that, Tom Reed. Some states may be regulating this, distributing medical marijuana in a much stricter fashion than others. Is there an ideal way to do this, Tom?
I do think that we, and the folks who are looking at this in New Hampshire, have done a good job of looking at some of the problems in other states and trying to address the problems. But there's more than just California and Montana. Most of the states that have done this have run into problems and have actually gotten to a point where they've talked about repealing some things. Washington State was a state that the federal government sent the letters to. Oregon, they actually raided some growers. So while we've looked at some of the issues, you can't solve everything. And as I said, I think the bigger problem is characterizing it as medicine and increasing the availability and protecting those who have previously been, you know, manufacturing marijuana for illegal purposes, to get it to friends, to children, to those who are using it illegally, to give them a cloak of protection that they put in a bag that says it's for medical purposes. And we've seen in other states where they're limited in the number of plants, and suddenly in Oregon, you know, they've got a 24-plant limit. The plants are the size of trees, you know, producing major pounds. And so in our proposed legislation, there's a limit on the size of the canopy. There are a lot of things that we've done that I think will minimize some of the problems that have happened elsewhere, but we will still have problems that happen elsewhere. And I do agree with Matt that it's very rare for the federal government to go after smaller things, in the same way that I don't think anyone can point to an example of someone in this state with a terrible illness who's been prosecuted for possessing marijuana or for handing marijuana to someone else. But we can point to examples of drug dispensaries around the country who, you know, are using that as protection to distribute their drugs elsewhere. In fact, even having bags of so-called medical marijuana, labeled medical marijuana, bags and bags, pounds and pounds, coming into our state.
Yeah, that's a huge concern,
Matt.
That's a huge concern, that it very easily gets out of the medical system and into the hands of, you know, regular folks.
It's well, not in the medical system. This stuff is not distributed by pharmacies. It can't be. It would violate federal law.
But by dispensaries, that's what I meant to
say. Doctors don't prescribe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, doctors don't prescribe this. They do a note saying it's okay. And that's been exploited in other states. We look at an example in Oregon. 10 physicians made 76% of all recommendations. One physician made 35%. That's one physician making 7,600 recommendations. That's
all
probably
right.
One every 15 minutes.
Tom, I got to let you go. We're going to go to a very short break, but keep it right here. More calls coming up.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from the Fairpoint Communications business team with local representatives who live and work right in your community. 877-601-7787. And from Extra Care Auto Repair and Hooks at repair of all makes and models by ASE certified technicians. Services include oil changes, tune-ups, brakes, and exhausts. 792-2273. That's 792-CARE. 940, this is NHPR.
Picasso claimed the purpose of art is to wash the dust of daily life from our souls. If so, NHPR's new Arts and Culture Facebook page is a great place to clean up. Whether you're an artist, musician, or just want to know about events in your community, you can join the discussion and post links and photos to share with NHPR listeners like yourself. Check us out on Facebook at NHPR Arts. And, of course, stay tuned to NHPR for our award-winning coverage of the arts.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, a new proposed wind farm in the Newfound Lake area brings up the wind power discussion once again. in New Hampshire. You can email us before the show if you'd like at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at medical marijuana. Once again, the discussion is happening here in New Hampshire. Most people expect a bill to come up in the legislature, and Governor-elect Hassan has spoken in support of limited use of medical marijuana. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And waiting in Antrim is Ken. Go ahead, Ken. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you very much.
Sure.
I have a severe back injury, and I was on Valium and morphine sulfate and methadone 24/7. Now, I live by myself, so I didn't have any other choice but to drive to my PT appointments, my doctor's appointments. And I now smoke marijuana at night to help me sleep, and it works, so I'm no longer on any of those meds. And I feel because of that, I'm a much safer driver, much safer person on the roads, and I'm much more able to go to my PT meetings and also get better. Because without this drug, I cannot sleep. And when you don't get any sleep, you don't get better. You get worse.
So, Ken, you were able to get rid of all those other drugs?
My parents took me down to Florida because I looked like I was a heroin addict because of the amount of drugs I was on. I had lost tons of weight. I was not getting better. I was getting worse. And I went cold turkey down there because I couldn't find any doctors to help me withdraw from them, so I didn't have a choice, and it was a very dangerous choice that I made. I could have died, my doctor told me, up here in New Hampshire, but when I did that, I realized that I had to deal with my pain instead of mask it, and I got on with my life, and with the help of marijuana, and I would much rather be on marijuana than any one of those other drugs.
Wow. All right, Ken, thanks a lot for calling in. And what do you think, Tom Reed? Boy, when you and I have talked about this before, we do get calls from folks just like Ken who tell very compelling stories about the benefits of marijuana in their lives.
Absolutely. And people are out there, and there are a lot of stories and anecdotes, personal experiences where people have benefited from marijuana and have had problems with other drugs. And there's no question that we've seen overdoses from the opiate-based medications. And in this country, many would suggest that we overprescribe that stuff. And this is a debate that needs to happen and something that needs to happen within the medical community. And we need to find safe and effective alternatives for folks. And that kind of story is a great one for moving forward in that direction. But what we're talking about in medicine and the system that we have in place for approving medicines is a rigorous scientific process. Pharmaceutical companies, it gets expensive when you start buying the pharmaceuticals from them because they paid for tremendous studies to make sure that things are safe. Doctors need to know what dosages to give people. It can't be kind of a guessing game for people walking into a dispensary or talking to a friend who grew some plants about how strong it might be. We also know that addictive drugs, and marijuana is an addictive drug like the opiates that were referenced by the caller, that cause a lot of problems in people's lives, and we try and deal with them. And in the criminal justice system, we're exploring all kinds of alternatives to address people with substance abuse problems that then link to crimes. And whether it was, a New Hope-type probation or drug court, and you can read about these things, we all rely on evidence-based practices. This is the new catchphrase. And same thing in SB 500. That was a term you heard all the time, looking at studies and making sure we don't look at anecdotes. We look at studies. And Governor-elect Hassan, then-Senator Hassan, was involved in some meetings revolving around the drug court implementation in Rockingham County. I know she knows the term evidence-based practices. She gets that. And when you look at the studies, marijuana is just not supported. You're going to find people who say it works. You're going to find people who swore by echinacea for years before science said it really isn't doing anything for you.
Well, I want to talk back. Go ahead, Tom, and then I want to raise another point. Go ahead. Finish up.
So I just think that we have to be very careful moving forward in this arena based on anecdotes and one or two or a few individual experiences when scientifically they would tell you that the harm outweighs the benefits and there are other ways to deliver the same benefits of medication. We just need to speed that appropriate scientific process forward. Absolutely.
Well, and Tom, you raised and our earlier guest Kevin Sabet raised the concern about distribution. Both you and he have said that so often marijuana, supposedly for medical purposes, ends up in the hands of young people, people who aren't sick at all. And I want you to address that, Matt Simon, as well. That's a huge concern. I know we keep talking about California. Boy, out there, there's enormous examples of marijuana, medical marijuana, just being taken by anybody, really. In some neighborhoods, there's more dispensaries than there are Starbucks, you know, four or five dispensaries within a 1 mile radius and so forth. So how do you avoid that concern that, you know, just anybody is going to end up getting a hold of marijuana?
Well, it is a concern, and we've been dealing with it ever since this bill has been negotiated in the legislature. I mean, every legislature who comes on board and says, yes, I want to support this legislation, their first, second, and third question is, how do we keep this from being like California? And that's when we get into the details of all the, you know, the best practices that have been observed in other states and trying to model our legislation off of that. And every time somebody says, oh, I have this concern or that concern, we find a way to work on it through the legislative process and try to come up with good policy. But, you know, Tom mentioned that every organization, every medical organization is against this. That's absolutely not true. The American Nurses Association, the American Public Health Association, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, I can go on and on, organizations that support safe legal access to medical marijuana. So
all the organizations
say we should have more science. But this is, to me, it seems to mirror what happened in the 80s when medical marijuana began to gain traction. More and more people started to use marijuana as medicine. The federal government had its own medical marijuana program where a limited number of patients received it directly. And then we saw Marinol rushed through the pharmaceutical process. And we saw the federal marijuana program ended and everybody said, oh, just take Marinol. We have a pill now for you. It's pure THC, which is the only psychoactive component in marijuana. Patients who take it say they get, quote unquote, too high, that it is an unpleasant psychoactive experience for them. But we see the status quo that Kevin Sabet wants us to continue using is, yes, let the pharmaceutical companies make medicines. We'll give these to people, and we'll continue the criminal prohibition of marijuana. Tom's right that there aren't people languishing in jail who've been convicted of possessing small amounts. But the people who aren't trying this, or who are living in fear if they are trying it, who are afraid to talk to their doctors, that's what we can change through policy. And
I just want to ask you real quickly then, so what is, you say best practices and you agree with the concerns, so what's the best setup in your opinion, Matt, to avoid some of these concerns that people have?
Well, first of all,
do it like Vermont, do it like Maine.
Well, I think Vermont like and Maine are both good models, and we could talk about both of them.
State-run dispensaries.
Well, they're not state-run. They're state-licensed. They're regulated by the state. They're nonprofit. They serve patients who qualify through the program, meaning that they don't just have a sore ankle, but they meet the qualifying criteria and have a written certification from their doctor. So that part of the bill is definitely based on best practices. Patients get a written certification from a doctor. They send it to the Department of Health and Human Services. They get an ID card that protects them from arrest, that gives clarity to law enforcement. When a police officer stops somebody, they have a card. If they're within the parameters of the law, they're legal. They're free to go. And, you know, that's so those patients have the option of whether they can cultivate a limited number of plants in an enclosed lock facility, which is spelled out in the law. And it was maxed at four plants this year. So 24 plants. Oregon can do whatever they want. And in this bill, it was four plants this year. And we also feel that patients should have the option of visiting a dispensary. Patients have radically different circumstances. Somebody who gets diagnosed with cancer and starts chemotherapy next week doesn't have time to plant seeds and wait 3 months for them to come up. They need to be able to get it more quickly.
Can you address also, Tom, a system that might work in your opinion, or should New Hampshire just not go down this path at all? I mean, is there a way to do this safely so that really only the most vulnerable, ill people can use marijuana, Tom?
I guess, you know, determining whether it's safe or not, I think, remains the role of the FDA.
And right now there's no FDA involvement.
Well, it's just, and there isn't, because, and I'll reiterate, you know, maybe some organizations have supported doing one thing as opposed to a different alternative. But the FDA issued a statement in 2006. Everyone still maintains it's the same. The academic medical community supports this. There are no sound scientific studies supporting the medical use of marijuana, and you know, growing a plant and smoking marijuana, not knowing what the dosage is, I can't suggest, because no one has suggested, that that's going to be safe. A way to do it, again, I think that the people who are pushing for this, and with many good intentions, and certainly when you call something a compassionate care or compassionate use act, it's hard to say no to that. And when you see the examples of people who have suffered, you want them to have whatever they can, and whatever we can get to them. They've tried to address some of the concerns and things that have happened in other areas. But we're up against violating federal law. We're creating a situation where, as we've seen in so many states, once you add the category of pain, and there, you know, in each state there may be some doctors who aren't as scrupulous as others, it becomes very easy for people to get cards. And all you're doing is enabling, you know, cover for a lot of people who want to work around the law. And we shouldn't be doing something that helps people work around a law, and certainly, get around or try to get around federal law and put us in a position where we're violating federal law. I want to throw in an example, if I could, of areas where there are dispensaries. And I'll pick Colorado, because California, Oregon, they've been beat up quite a bit. But Colorado and Fort Collins is where one of the dispensaries was after neighborhoods or towns, communities around it closed their dispensaries. And they saw the normalized, the acceptance of marijuana, and, drug infractions went up in the kids in the school district 300%.
So even in a tightly regulated system, there's a perception that changes, an attitude that changes, Tom?
The attitude changed. Kids figured it must be safe. You know, so many of my friends' parents, use it for every ailment that they have. Cards are easy to get, so marijuana was easy to get. No one was nervous carrying it around because they could have a card. Suddenly, you know, it's so much easier for kids to get their hands on. And there was a result that, you know, as the school district reported, a 300% increase in drug infractions, resulting in students' expulsions from school since the dispensaries got there. They saw marijuana-related crimes went up 40% between 2009 and 2012.
Okay, so that's the concern. Matt, can you address that real quick, and then I want to go back to our calls?
I can. Actually, there are a number of studies, and I've looked at this data myself. The government does two studies or two surveys that look at teen marijuana use rates, and teen marijuana use rates have not gone up in medical marijuana states following passage of these laws. In many cases, they've gone down, and the data refutes the idea. I mean, there may have been increased infractions in one town, and I can't speak to Colorado, but overall, these laws have not led to an increase of teen use, and they have been studied. I've got a whole stack of scientific studies sitting on my desk. I know Tom's a prosecuting attorney and doesn't have probably a lot of time to read research, but it does exist, and it exists to enough of an extent that doctors are willing to recommend marijuana if given the legal option to do so.
I'd like to get one more call in if we could, and this is Alan waiting in Portsmouth. Hi, Alan, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thank you. I am a physician in the Portsmouth area, and I'm actually a gastroenterologist. I treat a lot of Crohn's patients, patients with ulcerative colitis, patients with pancreatic cancer. And it takes a lot of hubris for an attorney to come on the air and tell me that I can prescribe OxyContin and I can prescribe drugs for Crohn's disease that could kill the patient in some cases, and not prescribe medical marijuana when I know damn well that those patients improve on it. There is not going to be an FDA study done on an illegal substance. That doesn't happen. And to say that there's no study to show its efficacy is really insulting to the great majority of physicians. We should have the right to prescribe this if we feel our patients are going to improve. To eliminate that, to make us, in a sense, conspirators to a crime, because we're trying to help our patients, you know, we get nothing from this. And we see our patients not able to eat, sleep, function, and be it a placebo effect or not, I don't know.
Placebo effect, yeah. And Alan, thank you for calling. It's good to hear from a physician. I do want to let you go so I can ask both our guests about this. Tom Reed, go ahead.
Sure. I'm suggesting that a physician can't do something because it's against federal law. The FDA hasn't approved it. It's still a Schedule I drug, which means there's been findings that there's no medically approved purpose for it and that it's harmful. So that's not, a lawyer coming. coming up with something. This is something that our federal government has determined, the FDA has determined, and it doesn't matter what political party is in the White House. Get yourself on the internet, go to the Office of National Drug Control Policy, whether it's the Obama administration or Republican administration. Everybody gets it when they get a chance to look at the data. They agree that the FDA position is supported by the scientific studies. And there are studies about the beneficial effects of component parts of marijuana, and we all should move forward to see that they move quickly to get these things available to patients in need. And this is how things happen. You know, someone says, I had an experience with something. Could it be an herb? Could it be willow bark? Next thing we know, we've created aspirin and we're dispensing it to folks. But we all have to be very cautious. And doctors, I think, are in an ethical conundrum trying to prescribe something that hasn't been properly studied. Because we know aspirin's beneficial. And I take 81 milligrams a day because that's supposed to help my heart. But if I take too much, it's going to ruin my liver and cause other problems. And we know that because there have been studies that have been done. And it's very dangerous when the studies haven't been done to just let people pick what their own dosages are. And I would hope the doctor in Portsmouth would agree with that. But I'm not coming up with anything other than to say, you know, I would suggest that someone can't do something because it violates federal law. I didn't pass the federal law, but I note that it's there, and I'm tasked with enforcing the laws.
Well, and real quickly, Matt, to you. So we've got a new legislative session opening up, newly elected lawmakers. A new governor in the corner office. What's the next step on this medical marijuana issue in New Hampshire?
Well, there will be a new bill introduced in January, a bipartisan team of sponsors, and it will go through this process, and we will try to make good policy and put this bill again on the governor's desk and hope she signs it.
All right. Well, and Tom Reed, I imagine the prosecutors will be getting together to talk to the governor and lawmakers about this and to state their opposition, as you've stated this hour.
And we'll certainly be willing to, you know, give our input on if this is something that's going to be passed on the best way that we can assure that it can be implemented.
Okay. Tom, thanks a lot for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Tom Reed, Deputy County Attorney in Rockingham County. Matt Simon, thank you also for being here.
Oh, thank you.
Matt Simon, Legislative Analyst for the Marijuana Policy Project. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Samantha Johnson. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.